Chapter 4. Brandon found his man. He had looked every night until this one. The man in the trench coat returned to the club. Brandon followed him this time. And this time, the man was not so lucky.
"If you don't tell me what I need to know, I will stick this dagger into your eye socket."
"No, wait, no, please."
The man, hanging upside down in the boathouse, goes by the name of Trenchcoat Kelly. He is always wearing the same military coat, easy to recognize and easy to spot.
"I know your brother, or I knew him. But I want to know who you guys are working for, or you're going to end up the same way as he did."
The man tries to shift his body, but the duct tape that wraps him from neck to ankle will have none of it.
"Look, we don't work for no one. I swear, we just run a garage, and that's all. Bruiser owns it, but he works for someone."
A punch to the chin sends the man's body swinging like a speed bag. Brandon reaches out and grabs the man to steady him.
"All right, let us start again. Who is Bruiser working for?"
"Okay, some lady named Mama Rosie. He doesn't tell me much. Just that she's old money, and she ran with the big guys in their 20s or something like that."
"So he is taking the girls for her?"
"Girls?"
"Yeah, the teenage girls."
"Those broads are old enough to make up their own minds."
"Not when they're drugged, like the one that you and your brother were planning on nabbing the other night."
"Come on, let me go. I swear I'll go straight. I swear, man."
"No, you won't."
Brandon leans closer to the trench coat's face. His eye pierces the man as he glares through the mask.
"She has a restaurant. That's all I know. We meet girls in restaurants and clubs and wherever."
"Bus terminals?"
"Yeah, sometimes."
"All right. Thank you. You have been very helpful. Mama Rosie's shouldn't be hard to find."
"You going to let me go?"
"Sure."
Brandon pulls a .45 from the holster on his side. Up until this moment, the long black coat had been concealing it. He aims.
"Hey, man, not like that."
The gun goes off.
The bullet hits the rope just above the man's ankles. He falls, and his body hits the wooden floor. But the neglected, rotted wood gives way, and he finds himself landing in the water below. He screams one last time as his body sinks to the bottom. Brandon watches the scene and then says,
"Wow, I didn't expect that to happen. Oh well, now to find Mama."
The outskirts of town.
"Ye are sure this is the house?"
asks Biggie Smalls from the rear of his sedan. He looks behind his car at the other three that are awaiting instructions.
"Yeah. They went in and never came out," says the accountant, Frank Macaroon.
Biggie takes a deep breath.
"All right, we crash the gate and go into the house and shoot it out if we have to. But we are leaving with Vinny. Now go tell the others to follow us in."
Biggie sits, staring at the high fence and the surrounding woods. The trail obviously leads to the house, but it looks like it is seldom used. He watches as the accountant leaps from the car. He shuffles his way to the car that sits behind them. Biggie grins and slides around into the chamber of his weapon. Inside Detroit City. The door to Manny's limousine opens. Commissioner Howe quickly slides inside.
We have a problem,
he says hurriedly.
What is it now?
Sarah has been killed.
How?
She was going to turn over evidence, and someone killed her before she could talk. Shot her dead right inside the interview room.
We both know who that someone is. Very disturbing. The fact that it took place inside the PD doesn't even surprise me.
He's getting out of hand.
I need to find him before he does any more damage,
says Manny.
But how? No one has ever seen him. Well, the few that have are all dead, or so they say, and Chicago is upside down.
He brought my brother in.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean Vinny has seen him, personally, I mean.
No, but it's a start.
No one has seen your brother in days.
I know where he is, and I have sent someone to retrieve him. I will have him back, and he will talk. Now go and make sure no one can link Sarah to me.
All right, Manny, but I don't mind telling you, things are getting scary in town lately. I mean, you have heard what he did to the boys in Chicago.
I am sick of hearing about Chicago.
And there is someone else.
What do you mean?
Rumor has it there is a vigilante going after thugs, killing them, leaving them hanging.
So? Sounds like he is doing us a favor. Now get out of here.
Manny watches as the man leaves his vehicle. He lights his cigar.
Take me to see Pop,
he says to the driver. The lead car lines up with the gate. The rear tires squeal as the car begins to make its run. Then it takes off, hitting the gate dead center. The gate flies apart, but then the car takes a sudden downward turn as the ground beneath the vehicle seems to give way. The earth drops from underneath, making a ramp that leads downward.
What's going on?
Biggie screams as the outside lights begin to fade into darkness, and the car suddenly comes to a stop at what appears to be an underground parking garage.
What is this?
Before Biggie can finish his thought, a car slams into the rear of his, then another, and another.
What's the matter with those idiots? Can't they see there is a pit?
The driver turns his headlamps on to see the tail end of several vehicles.
Incredible! This is an underground parking garage. Who could afford something like this?
Asks Smalls as he begins opening his doors.
You know, boys, we might be able to sneak right in and...
A sound catches everyone's attention as the cars are emptying out, and a noise begins to echo through the underground structure.
Boss, I see green eyes looking at me.
What are you talking about? I'm sure it's nothing. Everyone, turn your headlamps on,
Small says as he pulls his revolver from his right trouser pocket. Then, one by one, a puff of air, and then the men begin falling. Smalls turns his head from side to side, trying to see what is happening around him. And then he feels a prick in the side of his neck. His hand quickly reaches up. He feels something protruding out of him. He grips and pulls it. His eyes are getting fuzzy and they begin to lose focus.
A dart,
he says, then falls on his face.
Wonderful shooting, my dear,
Giuseppe says as he steps from the shadows. Then, from the opposite side, Lola steps out, carrying a rifle. Then he whistles, and a beautiful black panther emerges.
Good girl,
he says with a grin.
Who are they?
Asks Lola as she hands her husband the rifle.
I am not sure, my love, but we had better find out, or there might be more.
She kneels beside Smalls.
I've not seen this many come to us in a very long while.
You are right, not since the days of Russia, which is all the more reason we need to question them.
Giuseppe makes his way through the dark to where an in-house phone is placed on the wall near the elevator. He punches a few numbers and then,
Dr. Lenore, would you be kind enough to meet us in the chambers? Thank you.
He presses a few more buttons.
Julius, we have guests. Would you grab a few of the staff and be good enough to come and collect them and put them in the chamber rooms? Thank you.
He replaces the receiver. He turns to face his wife, who is now stooping to pet the large, sleek, black cat.
Now we will see who it is that keeps sending these men to us.
Yes, we might as well have some fun in the process.
She grins and stands. Her long, black, form-fitted dress twirls as she spins toward her husband. He grabs her around the waist and kisses her passionately. He lifts his head and looks into her eyes.
Maybe we should also prepare the devices. I do miss the screams that used to ring out from the halls.
Oh, yes, my darling, let's.
He again presses his lips to hers. He steps into his small out-of-the-way motel room. He pulls his long black frock coat from off his shoulders. He opens the only piece of luggage in the room, a small attaché case no larger than a family Bible. He opens it and pulls out a very old book with leather binding. He makes his way to the edge of the bed. He sits on the flowered blanket. He looks for a minute at the teal-green walls, then back to the book again. Then his attention turns to the phone. He picks it up. He tells the operator to whom he would like to speak with. And in a few minutes, the phone begins ringing at the other end. Hello, sir. She is dead. Yes, I am still here. She was turning evidence in the police station. Yes, sir. No one followed me. Shall I go or wait? At the other end, Mr. Cushing sits in his luxurious chair, sipping his afternoon brandy. He holds the phone to his ear, and in his soft British accent, he speaks. I want you to stay there. I sent another package this morning, but Manford is stubborn, which is one of the reasons he was selected in the first place. However, if he does not stop, I want you to get rid of him and burn everything he has ever touched. I will simply start again, as I have in Chicago. I don't want anything done to him just yet, however. He has made himself high profile. I can't risk it. If I can get him to step away, then it will be nice and quiet.
However, if he pushes me, then I will have no choice. All right. Yes. Just wait in the shadows. I will tell you more when the time is right. Goodbye. The man known as Raven Poe places the receiver back onto the cradle. He looks back to his book. He opens it and begins reading to himself the words that have always calmed any and all anxieties he may have. The complete works of Edgar Allan Poe. When Raven was a small boy, his mother would read the words to him each and every night before bed. He would listen to his mother's bird-like voice as she read. He would dare to dream dreams no man has ever dreamed before. He loved it and looked forward to it. She died when he was very young. His father gave him to his grandparents far from his childhood home. He grew up rough. He was forced to survive by any means necessary. He joined the army at 18 and was sent to Germany. Some men soften from their war years. Some grow hardened. He became the latter. When he left the army, he could not find any employment with the skill of killing. So he became a gun for hire. And then he got the attention of his current employer, who insisted that he change his identity, which he did. Now he reads the words of some of the softer poems in which his mother read to him so long ago. Across Town. Headlines. Police station infiltrated by lone gunmen. Witness and several police officers were killed in a shooting at police headquarters today.
Jack, stop reading that paper, says Weaver as he looked across at his friend.
Jack places the paper folded onto the tabletop. He picks up his scotch and sips.
They got away, Doc. Just vanished.
Do you think Manny had it done?
Asks Weaver. My question is, do you?
Hey, I've been out of the loop for weeks now.
Why the cane all of the sudden?
I have cancer. Why do you think?
Jack turns his head. He sees Molly standing near the bar talking to customers.
Never seen her happier, Jack says, taking another sip.
You have a new partner, huh?
Jack looks back to Weaver.
Yeah. I don't think she will last, though.
Oh, a she. How does Molly feel about a she partner?
I haven't told her yet.
You going to?
Of course.
Jack then looks to the door as Dylan Shepherd entered.
Hiya, Jack,
Shepherd says as he approaches Jack and Doc Weaver.
I'm sorry about Barry, Jack hears himself say before he even thinks.
Where are you on that?
Well, our only real lead was killed, but I guess you already heard about Sarah.
Yeah, I read the paper earlier. Any clues?
No clues. But a few good ideas.
Such as?
Sit down, Jack says as he slides a chair out for Dylan. I think she might have been working with Vinny, or possibly for him.
Dylan looks surprised.
What? Why do you say that?
Well, when I was locked up in the cell with Manny, I overheard them talking about Manny and Vinny. And one of them mentioned someone named Sarah. Actually, I didn't really put it together until the paper. Then, when I read the name, it triggered my memory.
You think it was Manny that had Barry killed?
No, I think he was after Sarah, so he sent someone to get rid of her for working with Vinny. And, well, Barry was a casualty. I've known Manny for a long time. I don't believe he would have killed Barry, especially since Barry was the one that rescued us. Manny is a crook, but he has a warped sense of loyalty about those kinds of things.
I'm gonna look into it myself, Jack.
You may not like what you find, Dylan, and if you get in the way, you know what I would have to do.
I am sure I won't, but I know the police, and they won't do anything. No offense, personally, to you.
Jack looks around the room. Dylan, the police department is different now. You know what, with Roger as captain. And that was Manny's idea. Jack pauses to sip his drink. I know who the trigger man was. Dylan loses his trademark grin.
How? Who?
A witness. Before coming here tonight, I wanted to talk to a few people. I knew everyone would be at home at this hour. I spoke to the woman that lives above Barry's apartment.
It was Biggie, Max says from behind Dylan. Saw your car out front and knew you would be here. I just left Barry's place.
Dylan looks back to Jack. She said a midget with a giant friend came in. She remembers it because she thought the circus was in town or something, and they left around the same time he was killed. Dylan takes a deep breath.
And?
He says after a pause. He didn't kill Sarah. I am dealing with that one.
What are you saying, Jack? Presses Dylan.
Do what you have to do. Jack lifts his glass to his lips again. Dylan looks up to where Max is still standing.
Where is he now?
Max shrugs.
Could be anywhere. Probably hiding. I do know somebody torched his bar.
Then who would know where he is?
Dylan pressed.
Who do you think?
Adds Max.
Van Johnson?
Yep. Jack then takes another drink.
Guess I will pay him a visit then, says Dylan.
Wait until morning. In the meantime, have a drink with me,
Weaver says, lifting a hand into the air.
One round to honor a dear friend, Barry.
Across town. He finally makes it to the one place he feels comfortable. Josie's brothel. It is his getaway from his wife and kids. He stops after work at this time every day. He parks near the door. He goes in, spends $20, and leaves. This night, however, promises to be much different than any other night. He does step from his vehicle. The air is cold, and wind blows light flurries of snow around his head. He doesn't mind. He sees the door and begins to make his way to the warmth that awaits him inside. He reaches for the handle, and then a searing pain in the back of his neck. He suddenly finds it hard to breathe or even mutter a word. He gasps and chokes. He looks down. Drops of crimson fall into the white snow. Then he falls forward and lands on his knees. The red flows heavier now. It stains the area in front of him. He gasps. He hears a scream from inside the building. The door is forced open, sliding his pain-filled body to the side. The woman grabs her mouth to try and muffle the other screams that are wanting to leap from her vocal cords.
She stands and stares at the man, lying face down, with a wooden arrow protruding from his neck. His final thoughts are of his ungrateful, nagging wife, who is never satisfied with him or the life he has made for her. He does not think of an adoring face and beautiful blue eyes. He only sees the complaining woman that she had become. Then his mind begins to fade. His eyes go dark. He gurgles one last time, leaving a bubble of saliva and blood forming near the corners of his mouth. Then he is no more. Carl Colvin steps from the bottom step. He throws his satchel over his right shoulder and turns to walk the sidewalk. He passes the Daily News sign. He passes the alley that separates the news from the seamstress shop. Then he sees his car parked in the empty lot. "Mr. Colvin," he hears a heavy voice say from behind him. Carl freezes. He slowly moves his hand to the inside of his satchel to where he carries the firearm.
"You won't need that."
Carl slowly turns to see a large man dressed in something that might be worn in the Middle East. He's also wearing a turban on his head.
"Mr. Mandrake has sent me for you."
"You mean the magician that performs downtown?"
"Yes."
"But why?"
"I do not know, sir."
"How do I know you're telling the truth?"
"You don't."
"Then why should I go with you?"
"Mr. Mandrake says you are a reporter, and that by curiosity alone you will come."
"I see. Well, he is not wrong. Lead the way."
Roger opens the door to the sound of running feet on a hardwood floor.
"Hello, honey. How was work?"
Mary asks as she takes her husband's hat and coat.
"Any word on that man that shot up the police station? That job scares me. This city is getting so bad."
Before Roger can respond, she continues.
"Oh, and a lady from the city offices called and said that they found a relative of Melanie's living in Oklahoma, and they are willing to let her live with them."
Roger waits for a pause before responding. He knows that she has not had an adult conversation in several hours, so he lets her unload all that she is thinking before adding,
"Have you told Melanie yet?"
"No, the woman is coming tomorrow to talk with her. I will let her handle it."
"Well, I hope."
The phone ringing causes Roger to divert his attention. He slowly makes his way to the telephone and picks up the receiver.
"Hello? Yes, this is he. All right. Try the jazz club. He is probably there. All right. Goodbye."
He places the receiver back onto the cradle.
"Who is that?"
asks Mary.
"Someone was killed a little while ago."
"Let me guess. You need to go."
"I need to be there to make sure the investigation gets started."
"I thought since you made captain, you wouldn't have to run out for stuff like this."
"I don't. But if Jack doesn't make it, one of us has to be there. At least to make sure some rookie doesn't destroy the scene."
"How long will you be?"
"Shouldn't be too long."
Roger leans over and kisses his wife tenderly on the lips.
"I will be back as soon as possible."
"All right, Captain York. You be careful now,"
she says with a grin. He sits alone, staring at the empty chair across from him. This was where they had their first date.
He looked at her as if she was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. But more than physical beauty was her earthly qualities. He reaches for his wine and lifts it to his lips. He will not, however, let himself get bogged down with sentiment. It will only serve to cloud his judgment. No, he needs to remain clear.
Mr. Van Johnson, your guest has arrived, says the head butler.
Manny looks up.
Thank you, Roland.
Manny watches as a middle-aged man in a dark suit and dark skin sits down at the empty chair in front of him.
Good evening, Mr. Van Johnson, he says in a deep tone.
Van Johnson says nothing. He does, however, pull a cigar from an inside pocket.
If you don't mind, I do not appreciate tobacco smoke.
Manny grins, and then lights the cigar.
Very well, the man says. I represent the governor's office, and he has asked me to extend this offer to you.
Manny says nothing.
He would like for you to leave town, and in doing so, he will set you up in any state of your choosing to oversee whichever manufacturing operation you choose.
Manny puffs his cigar and simply says,
Or?
Or, all of your past deeds are brought out, and you are discredited and brought down to nothing more than a street-level thug who made good by walking on the weak. You will be prosecuted for crimes you have committed or will commit and sent to prison, where a man will stick a knife into your heart, and you will die and be buried in a shallow, unmarked grave.
Well, that is a very detailed prophetic description.
So, what will my report to our friend entail?
How long do I have to decide?
The man looks at his wristwatch.
That long, huh?
Manny turns and flags a waiter over to the table.
We know you are looking for our friend. There was an incident in New York that resulted in the deaths of two men, and...
The man pauses. The waiter steps close to Manny. Manny then whispers something into the waiter's ear.
And someone will have to pay for the loss of those men. And...
The man turns his head to the right and watches as the waiter begins to speak with the other guests at various tables. And then, one by one, people at the tables begin to rise and leave their seats. The man's head remains to the right, but his eyes flash towards Manny.
What are you doing?
Manny leans forward.
I do not take threats. I give them.
Manny then looks up and past the man's head. Numbers is standing in the background.
And I know all about New York.
Manny nods his head. Numbers steps forward, brandishing a knife from behind his back. He draws close behind the man and plunges the knife into his neck. In only a matter of seconds, several men rush in and remove the body. Then a commotion from the rear of the room causes everyone to pause. The sounds of glass breaking can be heard, and suddenly three men step from the servants' area, and all three tote weapons.
Shepherd! What are you doing?
Manny asks as he peers at Dylan, Max, and Donnie.
I needed to see you, and, well, they wouldn't let me,
Dylan says, removing the cigar from the corner of his mouth.
Well, here you are.
Manny looks to Numbers.
What do you want?
He looks back to Dylan.
Biggie Smalls killed my man. I want him. Where is he?
This is ironic. I sent him to retrieve my brother, and, well, I have not heard from him at all today.
Does the name Sarah ring a bell?
Manny's expression drops to a frown.
Sarah, what about her?
My man, the one that rescued you, was killed. He was dating her.
Oh, I had no idea,
he lied.
I want him.
Is that not a job for the law?
I don't care at this point. Where did you send him?
All right, Dylan. I will make you a deal. He is in the same place my brother is. If you find him, keep the little rat, but you bring me my brother.
He is wanted by the law, Dylan says after taking a drag from his cigar.
As you said, I don't care at this point. They can have what is left. Do we have a deal?
All right, Manny. Where are they?
Some houses. I am not exactly sure where. All I know is Lip's accountant knows where it is. And?
Lip's?
Yes.
He went to the same house that Lip's went to?
Yes, as far as I know.
All right. I have an idea where they are then. I will bring Vinny back to you, but you had better not double-cross us, Van Johnson.
Dylan turns and makes his way from the room, followed closely by Max and Donnie. Manny turns to Numbers.
Follow them, and they will lead you to Vinny. I am sure of it. Bring Smalls and Vinny back to me.
What about Lips and Dylan?
Kill them if you have to. Smalls is a rat. He will give up too much. I should have killed him when I had the opportunity. I want him to disappear.
Numbers stares at his boss for a minute. He is loyal to Manny, but Biggie gave him his true start. Here is where the loyalty is divided, however. Numbers is brilliant, and he says the only thing he can say. Yes, sir.